You're listening to All the Best. I'm Maddie McQueen. This is an episode about having a good time with your mates. Our first story is about getting out on the field and giving it your all, even if it means breaking your nose or getting double vision.
Our huge oval, which took up so much real estate at our school, was always roped off during the week. No one could go on it, like it was hallowed turf. And so they'd have star pickets in and ropes around, and then obviously they'd take them out. But this one game, one of the star pickets was left in, and it just so happened I was running in this game and I got tackled and got tackled into the star picket, smashed my face, broke my nose. So it was basically on the side, like it was pointing like due west. It was so ridiculous. But also I had double vision for 2 weeks.
That's another story. I actually also once got a concussion during PE in year four or year five from trying to retrieve a ball that had gone into a tennis court next to the oval. They'd taken down the latticing over the tennis court, so there was only like 3 wires left, and I tripped over the wire that was like near my foot, and then my head hit the wire around my head height, and then I just fell backwards and I got a concussion. So I suppose that really went towards my mum not wanting me to play sport, really affirmed her beliefs. I think if I'd ever brought up like wanting to like join a team or something, she was like, nah, you can play tennis. Which I did.
And now I'm a professional tennis player.
Nah, a bad, nerdy tennis player. My doubles partner actually also used to hit me on the head with a tennis ball quite a lot as well. Yeah, she was like, all right, but when we played doubles and she was serving, I had to go down pretty low at the net to ensure that she did not hit me on the head. I didn't know how many stories these would end with me hurting my head.
My name is Bart Denaro.
Hi, my name's Chloe Gillespie.
And then the injury that ended my career, I was playing for Sydney Uni after school and I got caught on the bottom of a ruck sideways, and I got compressed so badly that the muscle tissue got pulled off my rib cage, and which made it very hard to breathe for a long time. But I remember being in the change room, like huffing and like wheezing, just like a troll in the corner. And David Lyons, who would go on to be a Wallaby and play a lot of tests for Australia. And there was like Channel 7 or whatever were in the dressing room with lights and cameras. He was sitting right next to me. I was there, hunched over like, I don't know, like a swamp thing, and he was getting interviewed about his like imminent glorious career.
Were your eyes saying like, help me? Like, were you sending any signals?
Send help.
Yeah, like, are you sending any signals?
No, I was trying to be shrink away. I did not want to be anywhere near that. And then that was my last game. That was the last game I ever played.
First real team sport I played was at the age of 24, which is quite late in life. We decided to start a work sports team. It was a group of work people, and we decided to play multi-sport, which basically meant you could play a different sport every week, because we, you know, couldn't decide on something, and we also weren't very good at anything. So we thought, you know, playing a different sport every week, not being able to get good at any one sport, was a great idea. Yeah, I did score some goals. We played basketball, and I famously am quite short. I'm about 5'2", but I was chosen to be a shooter in basketball, a famously tall person's game.
I had a basketball coach, this woman who had, I don't think, ever seen a game of basketball, but she I remember this really clearly. Our first ever training session, she's like, okay. And we all like got dressed and out on the court, ready to go. She's like, all right, we're going to warm up. We're going to do low walking. I'm like, low walking? We literally got down low and walked 3 laps of the court while the other teams with coaches who presumably had seen a game of basketball before were like looking at us. I mean, what the hell are they doing? All we were doing was low walking and shooting. Like, just try to get it. Like, it was just such a shambles.
And I actually scored quite a few goals. I don't think that's what they're called. Are they called hoops? I scored some hoops.
What are you wearing?
Oh, well, we had a team colour. So our first team, we were blue. So I had a blue T-shirt that actually had a little drawing of donuts playing basketball, which I thought was pretty apt.
Bunny jump.
Alison Chan and Ryan Pemberton produced that story. Our next story is about who you call when no one you know IRL can give you a ride to the World Jousting Championships.
Stardew Valley is like a little farming simulator. It's a bit like Farmville, I guess. Basically, you are a character who's inherited his grandfather's farm and you have to build it up to be successful.
I farmed all sorts of stuff. I would farm melons. I would farm strawberries and blueberries and hops. You dump it into a chest. You just put everything you want to sell in the chest and it goes away overnight and you get your money.
That's Hamish. He's got a big smile, deep brown eyes, and he's a huge gamer.
In the past fortnight, a week and a half actually, I've been playing Stardew Valley. I've probably put in nearly 40 hours.
He's been a gamer since he was a kid, and he's always had friends in real life that play games and online friends that play games, but the two have never really crossed over.
So you have your real friends, who I definitely play like a lot of games with, and you have people who are just people you know online. I kind of just divide those people up, and I never really considered what it would be like to meet a lot of those people in real life.
5 years ago, he joined an online gaming group called the Waterford Clan.
So the main group of guys in Waterford when I joined were Salvatore, Gondor, Monty, who's the guy who brought me into the clan, Victor, and Bishop.
Those are all their gamer names, and Hamish has one as well. Online, he's known as Dylan, or Dill for short. This is one of the Waterford Clan members, Bishop, explaining how that came about.
So before that, he was Hammer Guy, and then he became Dylan, which was one night we were sort of just with the clan chat, and obviously that conversation comes up. We've never met, so we all were saying, what kind of names match voices? And one of the members obviously was talking about Hamish. He goes, he's definitely a Dylan. And from that, it almost stuck. It was like, he's definitely a Dylan, 100%. So everyone was just calling him Dylan.
The group would log on to their voice chat after work and play all sorts of games, from medieval war games to bank heist games. Their favourite was one called Payday 2.
Okay, time for a jewellery hit. We need at least 3 bags. That should be fairly easy.
Basically, it's 4 players getting together to rob a bank. So what you steal varies from mission to mission. Sometimes you steal gold, sometimes you steal cash, and the police will come to try and stop you from doing that. Once you trigger an alarm, the police will start to come in. I think we played Payday for about 2 years.
Over those 2 years of logging on most nights to play games together, Hamish and Bishop's online friendship started to bleed into real life.
Like, I've always been close with Bishop and the other guys in Waterford because for a while there, we would trade games. Like, my birthday, his birthday, and Christmas, we would always send each other games. Like, we would pick the worst games we could find. He sent me a furry dating simulator, and he sent me a game called How to Fall Boyfriend, which is a pigeon dating simulator. And I sent him a tank girl dating simulator and I sent him a few other like little stupid games like that. And it was just like a back and forth thing we did for quite a few years.
I think back to Facebook's funny is one of those indicators of friendship. It's a sort of a weird thing. You're like, we're now Facebook friends. And I think back to some of the messages we send each other in the early days. Like, I'd be sitting at work and I'd just send him a picture of my suit. Like, things I was just eating at lunch. And he'd just talk about his day and we'd joke around.
But for 5 years, their friendship had solely existed online, whether it was playing games or on Facebook, until one day, Hamish decided he wanted to go and see the World Jousting Championships, which were being held near a town called Warrigal, which happened to be the same town that Bishop lived in.
Hamish might have told me about it, and I think a few other friends had, you know, hinted that there was a little jousting thing going on. So I was like, oh, that sounds cool. And then Hamish kind of said, oh, I'm interested in going. I'm like, ah, like down in my neck of the woods, that means he'll be able to come and see us. So I was trying to get the gist of what day he was wanting to go. He's like, oh, I'm thinking Sunday, that'll be the last day. I'm like, okay, you just let me know and I'll come pick you up at the train station, we can head off. And a few more times I'm like, you just let me know if this is happening. And I'm not sure. He was a little bit vague, so I'm like, I don't know if he's going or not.
Because I was talking to him about it. I was like, it's in Warrigal, I might go. And I was like, oh, but I don't know how I'd get there, so I probably won't. And then Bishop was like, oh, if you're going to go, I can take you. And I just thought it was like an offhanded remark. I didn't think he was serious. As it turned out, he was serious.
So on a crisp June morning, Hamish jumped on a train and headed to Warrigal.
So I got off the train and was immediately very confused by the layout of Warrigal Station. I was a little bit anxious. What if he doesn't like my real life persona? What if he doesn't like who I am? What if I'm like fatter than he thinks I'm going to be? Like, all these really weird things go through your head, I think. It's this really weird thing. Like, it's almost like a dating app for the first time, right? Like, you're going to meet someone for the first time and it's like you've built this persona online, but it's like, is that going to hold up in real life? Is this going to change the way we interact with each other online? I think all that stuff kind of goes through your head for a little while the first time you're like, you're thinking about that sort of stuff. And it's 5 years that, like, I've talked to this guy, known this guy for. That's a long time. And it's like, there's like a lot of, I guess, shared history, shared framework there. And then I got a message from Bishop, and he was going to pick me up a coffee. And so he was going to be like a little bit after the train got there, and that was fine. And so I like, yeah, I guess I was just nervously, a little bit anxiously waiting, just being like, you know, what's this going to be? And then I had ducked back inside and then came back out as he, like just after he pulled up. Here he was in his car, he had a coffee.
You know, he walks off the, walks from the platform and comes across, and there he is, and he does these finger guns, and I'm thinking, ah, that's him. I know him.
I remember being a little bit freaked out by his driving. I remember him being like, man, he sits a lot, like his seat's a long way back, and he sits a long way back, and it's like, he's like, got that super gangster kind of like driving style, like way laid back and stuff. And I could sense his nerves, I think, as well. But yeah, I think we got past that relatively quickly.
It's like meeting up with a friend you've known for years, which we had. It was sort of, I know this person. I didn't know them, how they look, but I know who they are.
They drove to a place called Lardner Park that had been turned into a medieval village filled with knights in shining armour, jesters and villagers. They spent the day watching jousters knock each other off horses and standing on the sidelines of war reenactments. Slowly, the mild awkwardness that had been there at the beginning had disappeared, and before long, it was time to say goodbye.
Once it had finished and all that was over, we just quickly grabbed something to eat before his train and...
And then, yeah, like, dropped me off at the train station and away I went. I got a big hug.
I do see Hamish as a good friend. It's weird to think that such a friendship grew from someone you don't really know at all, but I do imagine him as a friend. And to me, with friendship and the people that I know who are close to me are not just friends, they're family.
That story was by Jordan Fennell. You're listening to All the Best on FBI Radio 94.5. I'm Maddie McQueen. All the Best is about training emerging Australian storytellers in the art of audio. If you want to be a part of the show, you can start by pitching to us from anywhere in Australia. We also have a team of wonderful supervising producers to help you. email contact@allthebestradio.com if you want to make radio with some new mates. Every friendship is based on some sort of connection. This one is based on an internet connection. Do you ever do that thing where you sit there with someone else, flicking through your phone or playing around on your laptop, not saying a word to each other? And sometimes hours pass with you both there in your own little internet worlds. I think it's actually a pretty common activity that people do together, but my friend and I actually actively plan on doing this. And we've come up with a name for it.
You'd be like, WYD, do you want to IBT? And then if we both decide that we want to IBT, then you usually come over at some point with your lappy and we IBT. IBT is an acronym for Independent Browse Time. It basically means that we get together and independently browse on our separate browsing devices. And I think the very important adjective here is independent. So it's important that it's a private experience, even though it's a social one. Like, you can't ask the other person constantly what they're doing, or you can't try to have a full-on IRL conversation. You have to respect the integrity of IBT, and you have to have your own browsing experience separately but together.
So for instance, someone couldn't show up to IBT without a phone or a laptop and expect to IBT with you?
No, obviously not. What a joke. God, that makes me uncomfortable just thinking about it. So you definitely can't sit there and like look over the other person's shoulder and see what they're browsing. That's against the rules.
Browsing is a pretty defining feature of this friendship. Sometimes it's planned and organised. We'll actually meet up in order to browse. But it started to creep into other times. As in, like, all the time.
So I think you and I were hanging out with my housemate, Mickey, for a while. And then Mickey left my room. And as soon as he left, the room just went silent. And both of us just whipped out our phones and started browsing. And then I think it was me. I think I stopped and I was like, wow. Like, I just realized that that was like the first time that we've had that much of a conversation in a long time. And as soon as the third party leaves, it's like we resort back to our natural state together, which is browsing. And then we talked about it for a bit and you speculated that the only time that we actually really converse is when it's either completely socially unacceptable to browse, like when we're with other people, or when it's physically difficult for us to browse, as in like when we're walking. So we spend a lot of time together, but most of it's in silence.
Which is really nice.
Yeah, it is really nice.
Okay, so we've all heard the snide remarks directed at the young people in the cafe. We're both just looking at their phones and barely talking to each other. And I've just realised we are those young people. And I'm so okay with it. That silent time together is really special.
So I can imagine to an onlooker it would look like we don't want to talk to each other. But I don't know, I find that the digital world is so like all-encompassing that to connect with someone on the internet, I feel like it's just as valid as connecting with them IRL. I mean, I see it as a pastime and a little bit of a vice. It is quite indulgent. We are just sitting there, like it's a completely sedentary activity. We sit on the couch for like 5 hours. And like, to be honest, most of the time what I'm looking at and reading isn't really stimulating me in any intelligent way. It's just like dumb memes and like my Twitter feed, or like, I don't know, people having beef on Threads and like comments on Jamie Oliver recipes that I'm like screenshotting and sending you. I think the fact that we do it as an active like social occasion, that it's actually an excuse for us to get together, and it's an experience that we're sharing, I feel like it only brings us closer together.
She is my best friend. Certainly not your average girl. Yeah, she's my best friend. She understands me.
That story was by Matilda Fay. Whenever I'm stressed out, I turn to Tetris. Something about methodically arranging blocks that disappear is so satisfying. I'm also really goddamn good at it.
I stopped by Salvo's on the way home from work. The store was mostly empty in the late afternoon. Two work-experienced kids were dawdling by the counter, chatting about the approaching blood moon. I picked up a cheap, plastic, handheld version of the game Tetris, batteries included, flipping the on switch to see if it still worked. The screen came to life, accompanied by the catchy theme song, reminiscent of an old Russian folk tune. It was the first time I'd heard that melody in almost two decades. It washed over me like a cold frost. I shut my eyes and I was eight again, on my Game Boy under the blanket way past my bedtime, trading sleep for the chance of a higher score. That was the thing. There was always more Tetris to play. It didn't matter how good you were at fitting the pieces together. The lines would clear and you'd have to build back up again. As a kid, I thought I'd be playing the game forever, but my teenage self had other things in mind. Now that I was approaching 30, stumbling upon this echo of my youth filled me with a strange sense of sadness, like I was yearning for something that no longer existed, or maybe never even existed at all. Linus prepared a late lunch when I got home. We shared cold ratatouille alongside a small plate of smoked salmon. Afterwards, I brought out the game as we settled on the couch, his body curled beneath mine, my head perched within the arch of his shoulder and neck. A perfect union. The light of the golden hour cast a hazy glow upon the room, giving Linus the appearance of a flawless angel. It was my turn first. I was shocked to find that the game was a lot more difficult than I remembered it being. The pieces seemed to drop a lot faster, or maybe my reflexes weren't as sharp as they used to be. They stacked on top of each other, creating gaping holes that snaked all the way to the top of the screen. And soon my game was over, within moments of it even beginning. I watched on in silence as Linus proceeded to play. His skills were apparent, slotting pieces into one another as if he had planned it in advance. With his eyes still glazed over the device, he spoke up. "There's something about the game that just speaks to me." "What do you mean?" I asked him. "I don't know. I just feel so much control when I play it. Like, even if I get the wrong pieces, I have the ability to make them fit however I want them to. It's not just a game for me, you know. It's a way of life." I felt my grip on Linus's waist tighten until I was clenching it so hard that it must have been hurting him, though he didn't seem to take any notice. I thought about the meaning behind his words and the bizarre matter-of-factness in which he said them. If life to him was like a game of Tetris, then how did I fit in his master plan? I quickly changed the topic. "I heard there's gonna be a blood moon tonight. Did you want to watch it in the park together? We could have a picnic." "Oh," he answered plainly. "I forgot to tell you, I've made plans to see it with people from work. You can come if you'd like to, but I'm just not sure if it's your scene." "No, it's okay," I replied. "I don't want to get in the way. I'll probably be asleep before it happens anyway." Linus was gone within the hour. With the house to myself, I decided to have a bath. The sun had long set by the time I slipped in, leaving the room plunged in almost complete darkness. I closed my eyes and felt the water fall slowly in temperature until my skin formed a layer of heavy goosebumps. My legs were small enough that they could float without touching the edges of the bathtub. They were removed from the world, weightless and impossibly heavy at the same time. I thought about distant stars, shooting radiant beams through cold space at the speed of light, and then dying slowly. I wondered if there was a ray of light out there, hurtling from one end of the universe to the other, never getting a chance to let something feel its heat. Our encounters were nothing short of a miracle, even the ones so fleeting you'd question if they ever happened at all. The open window above the sink brought in slow trickles of light from random passing cars. They caught on the shower curtain and exploded into formless shapes, constantly shifting. If I concentrated hard enough, I could make out the 7 different Tetris pieces phasing in and out of one another. I had a sense that they were teasing me, flickering into existence as if daring to be seen, before retreating into a space untethered. The water was almost freezing cold by the time I finished my bath. It had just crossed into midnight, into the early hours of the next morning. I dried myself off in front of the open window, taking delight in the pruny texture of my fingers and toes. From my vantage point, I could see the city skyline shining brightly in the distance. I tried to imagine a single light, in particular as Linus, out there in the world, but soon I lost track of which one it was amongst the countless others. In the night sky, the blood moon was beginning its transformation. For one single moment, I was standing in between the sun and the moon, caught in the right time and place. How lucky. The deep red light it produced shone through the bathroom window. It cast the shadow upon the tiled wall behind me. There was my naked silhouette, made up entirely of small squares, like an unbroken wall of Tetris. No gaps in sight.
That story was by Michael Nguyen-Huynh. Sound design and original composition by Suzanne Derry. The supervising producer was Nina Enover with Alison Chan. All the Best would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands on which we make these stories, and pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging. All the Best is made at FBI Radio in Sydney, in association with SYN and 3RRR in Melbourne. This episode was mixed and compiled by Alina Godwin. Our executive producer is Alison Chan. Jordan Fennell is our Victorian State Coordinator. The All the Best Community Coordinators are Chloe Gillespie and Danny Stewart. Our SYN Community Coordinator is Erin Dick. Matilda Fay is our social media producer, and I'm your host, Maddie McQueen. Shining Bird composed our theme music, and Annie Hamilton designed the artwork. All the Best is also a podcast, so subscribe to us. We're heard across Australia on the Community Radio Network, and we're made possible by the Community Broadcasting Foundation. You can find out more at cbf.org.au.